Okay, we're going to start here at the top of Puyud Bet Amud Aleph, Kufyud Bet Amud Aleph, where the Gemara is discussing the mission that we spoke about here in Idachat. And here, speaking about Iranidachat, the mission had said that Ad Shidach Rubah, it's not classified as an Iranidachat until the majority of the people in the city have been drawn to worship of Avodah Zarah. Question is, and this is what the Gemara asks, is Heichi Avdinan. How do we do this? How do we know if the robe of the city is really Hudach or not Hudach? So I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda suggests like this: Danin v'chovshim, danim v'chovshin. What we do is we bring to court, we bring to trial each of the individuals, and as each individual is brought to trial, then we incarcerate them afterwards till we determine whether there's a rove, but that the majority of the city has been nidach, or whether they should be classified as individuals. So we do the way we figure out, or the way that we calculate whether the rove has happened or not, is that we bring everybody to trial, but we don't execute anybody till we're certain. So in the interim, we put them into, we incarcerate them in order to figure out whether there is a rove. So that's what we call inuya din. It's a restriction that we learned about earlier in the Masechta, that we try, in a case where someone is found guilty, we try to execute them as fast as possible, so that it doesn't drag out, and so that they're not left in a state of fear and bad feelings and the unnecessary pain from having this dragged out. We say execute them immediately. Over here, you're creating a situation, by definition, that people are going to be drawn out. Their cases are going to be left there, because the first person who is tried is going to have to wait until everybody, until they reach the whole city, has been finished being tried. So that's not palatable, that's not acceptable, that we allow somebody's din to drag out like that. So, Ela Amar Ula. Ula is a different suggestion. Danin Visoklin. Danin Visoklin. Rather, we bring them to trial, and then we stone them. Bring them to trial, and then we stone them. Which means that each individual, we put them on trial. If they are found guilty, then we found them guilty as an individual. That is, a Mesit, a Nisait, someone who was individually drawn to worship Avodah Zarah, and they're stoned until we reach 50%. Once we realize that 50% of the city is now worship the Avodah Zarah, we switch the punishment for those that are subsequent to the first 50%, and we give them only cherev, we give them saif from that point forward. So what will turn out, according to Ula, is until you reach the halfway point, until you reach the 50% mark, each individual will get skila, and from the 50% point forward, then those people will get saif or cherev, like a punishment of an irni dachat, and also their monies will be burnt. It's not clear from Rashi, it's not clear from the Gemara, as well as the story with the monies of the first individuals. Once they've determined it's an Irani Dacha, it's really all the monies of the city should be burnt. I mean, at Kosh Lala, we burn everything, all the possessions of the city. But we also know the reason that the possessions of the city go is because they got, or the punishment for Irani Dacha is Saif. Now then, an individual worships of Avodah Zarah, or an individual has been Nisait, their punishment is Skila, but therefore their Mamon Palet, their money is saved. So here it's not clear for those first 50% that got stoned what the status of their money is. So Itamar, we have a similar machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Danin v'soklin, Danin v'soklin. Rabbi Yochanan says like Ula, which is that we go individual by individual, and for the first sets of individual until we reach the point of 50% to the rove of the city, they get skila. Reish Lakish Amar, Marbin Aleihem Batei Dinim. I have a different solution to the problem. So far, we've had, the assumption was that all these individuals were tried sequentially. So therefore, we have a problem. We're either going to have Inuya Din, or you're going to have the first series of individuals get a punishment of Skila when they possibly deserved Saif. So Reish Lakish says, an easier solution is just to create more Batei Dinim. We'll create a larger number. We'll bring in from other cities. We'll pay a large Batei Dinim, a number of Batei Dinim, and therefore we're able to try simultaneously numerous individuals, and therefore we'll know much quicker, we'll know immediately whether there is an Irani Dachar or not. Gemara challenges this position, Reish Lakish, Ini, this is really true. If Amar Rabbi Chama Bar Yosi, Amar Rabbi Oshia, Botseta, Taisha, who, Owe Taisha, he, that when it comes to the worshipping of Avodah Zarah, you take a man or a woman out to Lisharecha, out into the gates of your city to try them. And on that, the drasha we say is, Ish visha ta motzei l'sharecha. Only individuals are taken out to your sha'ar, meaning to the local based in. V'yata motzei kol ha'ir kula l'sharecha. When it comes to an entire city, they are not tried in the local based in. They are tried in the Beit Din HaGadol up in Yerushalayim. So how could Reish Lakish's solution over here be, Mar b'alehem batei dinim? Let's bring more Bate Dinim to try them. Well, any Reidachat requires the Beit Din HaGadol. If it requires Beit Din HaGadol, why would you be Marbe Bate Dinim here? It does nothing for you. So Gemara says, Ella, Marvin Lahem Beit Dinim, Uma Ainin Bidinayim. So we have is the equivalent of a grand jury, is that we set up Bate Dinim to look into the matter to see if there's enough evidence or sufficient evidence that they could be tried. If we see that there's sufficient evidence for the majority of the city to be tried, then we send them up to Yerushalayim, to the Beit Din HaGadol, for them to conclude the case and to bring a Psak Din on the case. And then they'll kill them up in Yerushalayim. So these Bate Dinim, when Beis Hamikdash says that we're marvel on Bate Dinim, these Bate Dinim are not executing. All they're doing is checking the facts. They're seeing if there is enough evidence, if there is enough of a case to send it up to Yerushalayim. It's basically the equivalent of what we would do with a grand jury today who look into whether there is ample evidence to bring someone to trial to prosecute them. Okay, now the Mishnah, Gemara continues with the Mishnah. It says, Takeh, Takeh, it's Yoshvei Ayir. They have to wipe out everybody of the city. Tara banan. Chameret v'agamelet. Overet mimakom lemakom. When we talk about a donkey caravan or a camel caravan. These are, you know, sheyarot, large caravans of individuals that travel from city to city. Now, lanu betocha, if they stayed within the city, v'dchuima, and they followed along with the rest of the city and they worshipped the Avodah Zarah, if they already had stayed there, and that they had resided there for 30 days, so then they get the punishment like an iranidachat, which is besaif, by the sword, and their money is lost, meaning it gets destroyed with the rest of the possessions of the city. If they were there less than 30 days, these people who are part of the caravans, they get skila, umamanam palate, but their possessions are saved. Because if they are there less than 30 days, they're not part of the city. So if they're not part of the city and they went and they were convinced to worship Avodah Zarah, that's like an individual who was coerced into worshiping Avodah Zarah, like an estate, and that person or that individual is chayav skila and not saif like the rest of the arnidacha. So therefore they'll be treated like individuals. So now the Gemara changes, charges it, v'reminu. Right, we have very many. We have a Braita. We also have a second. We'll see also a Mishnah that says Kami Yebir V'Yekan Sheyir. How much time does a person have to reside in the city to be classified as a resident of the city? Yud Bet Chodesh. That's for 12 months. So now, what do you have here? We have a Mishnah that's telling us that 30 days or after 30 days. They're considered residents of the city, and therefore they would be killed along with the rest of the Nirani Dacha with the punishment of Nirani Dacha. And now we have an additional Tanaic source telling us, no, that how long does a person have to be in a city to pay taxes in the city? They have to be there for 12 months. You're not classified as a resident of the city to pay taxes until you're there for 12 months. So it's a stira. Samarava lokasha. Hamlahave mi bnei mato. Halmahave miatve mato. The difference, I could try to word it this way, one, the difference between a temporary resident and a permanent resident. Or, it's a difference between someone who resides in the city and someone who is a citizen of the city. So there's a more temporary status, or there's a status that a person is classified as being part of the city, but he's not considered to be a resident of the city. In order to pay taxes, you have to be a resident of the city. Resident of the city, that's 12 months. In order to be considered or classified as part of the city, or someone who resides within the city, someone who resides in the city, whether they're a temporary resident, whether they are classified as just living in the city, those types of people, 30 days is sufficient to be classified as part of the city. So that will be the true for the din here of Ira Nidachat. Tanya, this Tanya is v'nichuta. We have a braisa that makes that exact distinction. A mudar hanam mibnei ayir. Someone who says, I will not get a noah from anybody in the city. Im yesh adam shenishtaya sham yud bet chodesh, asur leinot bimenu. Anybody who's lived there for 12 months, he can't get any noah from them because they're classified as bnei ayir, as residents of the city. On the other hand, if he says, pachot mikan, if it was less than 12 months, more to the land, no, he can get hana from it. But Yoshvei Ayir, he says, those that are residing in the city, meaning the temporary residents, or those that just live there, im nishtah le'amid yom, if they're there for 30 days, asur le'anot mimenu, then you can't get hana. Pachot mikan, more to the land, no. So you see the same distinction between a permanent resident, or someone who's considered to be a citizen of the city, versus someone who's a temporary resident, someone who's a visitor to the city, but it's still classified as being part of the city. So when it comes to the status of citizen or permanent resident of the city, which is classified as Bnei Ayir, that's 12 months. We're talking about Yoshvei Ayir, those that just reside there, temporary residents that are just visitors or living there, those Yoshvei Ayir, 30 days is the threshold for such a title. Tanu Rabbanan says in the Pasuk, Achareim Ota.
What have we concluded there?
That when it comes to taxation, and it comes to anything that has to deal with the citizenship in the city, you need 12 months. When it comes to be classified as someone who resides in the city, someone who's a part of the city, for instance, for Inyan Yidachat, 30 days is sufficient as the threshold. So if you live there for 30 days, you'll be classified as part of the Inyan Yidachat. If you live less than 30 days, then you're treated as an individual. For taxation purposes, you won't be taxed until you're there for 12 months. Eitan Rabbanan, Acharei Mota, Prat, Lechnechsei Tzadikim Shebechutzela. So it says, Acharei Mota, you destroy it. So now that means excluding the nichsei tzadikim that are outside of the city. Vet kol asher ba, there are both nichsei tzadikim shebetocha. It includes the possessions of the tzadikim that are in it. These are obviously, I guess, people who were found innocent, were not seduced to worship the Avodah Zarah, were not pushed or attracted to follow the entreaties of the individuals who tried to bring them to Avodah Zarah. So therefore, their possessions that are in the city are lost along with the rest of the city. But their possessions outside of the city are not lost. Shlola, velo shlau shamayim. Right? Only those that are your possessions are lost, but not possessions that belong to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Vet kol shlala. And all of the possessions, the rabot, nechsei rishayim shechutzalah. This comes to include those that are found guilty in this instance, not only their possessions in the city, but even their possessions outside of the city are burnt, are destroyed. Amar Rav Shimon, as Rashi points out, Rav Shimon is doresh time of the craw in wherever he can. So over here is also doresh time of the craw in the Tosefta, which it says, Rav Shimon b'nei ma, amarat Torah, nechsei tzadikim shvetocha yovedu. Why do we say that the possessions of the tzadikim that are found in the city are lost? Why are they destroyed? They're not being tried. In the end, they're not found guilty. Why are their possessions lost? Mi karam lahem shiduru b'tocha. Who caused the tzadikim to live in such a city? I mean, if they really are tzadikim, and why would they want to associate themselves with people, these evil people, these people end up worshipping Avodah Zarah? But what's compelling a person to live there? Their possession, their money, their business, whatever it is. Mamanam lefikach, mamanam aved. Because it's their monies or their possessions that drove them to live in the city, therefore that's what's destroyed along with the city. So they themselves are not found guilty, but their mamon and their possessions are quote unquote found guilty, because that's what drove them to live in the city. Amamar, vet kol shlala tikbots. You have to gather together all of its possessions. Rabot, and if say Rishayim shebechutzla, this comes to include the possessions of the Rishayim that are outside of it. Amrav chitzra, uvenik batzim letocha. The qualification here about possessions of a Rasha, I mean of those that are found guilty, that are outside the city, that are included in the requirement to destroy their possessions, is only benik batzim letocha. It's only when they can be brought into the city. What does it mean that to be brought into the city? So the way Rashi explains it over here is that any possession of the Rasha, which is within proximity to the city, that on the day you're going to burn all the possessions of the city, you could bring it there within that day, that must be brought there and put in the city to be burnt. So that's the first qualification. The first qualification has to be within a distance that within the same day you could bring the possessions over here. That's number one. Number two qualification that Rashi makes is dafka shayu betocha. That's only if the possessions were once in the city. At one point in time they were in the city and now they left, that they put them as a pikadon, they put them in a safety deposit box in another city. Those possessions are brought back into the city. But had they never entered the city whatsoever, they were always outside of the city, they are not included in the requirement to destroy all the possessions of the city. So according to Rashi, Rav Chisda's qualification here of Unik Batzim Letocha has two points to it. One point is it has to be within proximity, that you could bring it within the day that you're burning the city, you can bring it all and gather it into the middle. And number two is that it has to have once been inside the city. It has to be possession that was once in the city and has left, not that possessions, right, that were outside of the city or always outside of the city. They never entered the city. Right, this is the, as Rav Chisda's idea, is that the necessity, or is the advice, that one should diversify. And they should have their possessions in different places and far away, because then if anything goes wrong with the possessions in one place, the others are protected. And that's what Rav Chisda is somewhat indicating over here. I'm Rav Chisda. Pikdonot shel anshei ir hanidachat mutarim. Those collateral of anshei ir hanidachat are mutar. So the Gemara wants to know, echidami, what are we talking about collateral over here? I leima d'ir acheret. Right? If you say that they are from another city put their pikdonim to, or gave them over to be watched by those individuals inside of the city of the ir hanidachat, ve'inuhu b'gava, now they're inside, pshita d'mutarim. Right? Of course they're mutar, lav shlolohu. It's not the shlal of ir. It doesn't belong to the city or any of the residents of the city. It belongs to someone who's outside of the city. So reason that it should be destroyed. Vela did who? So what are you going to suggest? It's the possession of those that are in the city. It's their possessions that they are being mafkid. They're putting on deposit with someone outside of the city. And the possessions are sitting in this other city. So the Gemara said, well, that's easy. Why does Rav Chisda have to tell us this? This din is dependent on the previous din that Rav Chisda gave us, which is, if they can be brought within a day to the city, then why are they mutar? They should be included within the possessions of the city. If it's further than that, the distance is more than that, then Rav Chisda already told us that, that is, those are chayav to be burnt. But if it's not nikbatzim l'tocha, it's not chayav to be burnt. So what is Rav Chisda adding for us in this second case of collateral? Rav Chisda says, lo'olam de'ir acheret de'mafgadei b'tocha. If I made a case where it's from another city, it's from another party outside of the city who's now putting on deposit his items with an individual in the city. Ah, so why? Of course that we don't burn that. We just said that before. It's obvious. That the resident of the ir hanidachat accepted responsibility for the item and that he would replace the item. So what would I have thought? Once he accepts full responsibility for the item, that means if anything happens to the item, he's on the hook for it. We would look at it as being his mamon now. Because if this item is lost, he's on the hook for the money. So as long as this item's around, right, then he benefits from the item being around. So I would have thought it's his possession. Because this item protects him from having obligations. If the item's lost, he has to pay. Mara says, Kamash Balan, that's where Chizuk comes to teach us, that even though he's accepted achrayut on it, it's still not classified enough to be his money to be destroyed along with the rest of the possessions of the city, but rather it remains in the possession of those that are outside of the city. Since it remains in the possession of those that are outside of the city, therefore it is not burnt alongside with the shlal of the city. Amar Rav Chisda, so now we have a third statement of Rav Chisda. First statement of Rav Chisda was, number one. Number two, statement of Rav Chisda is that pikdonot of those outside of the city that are placed in the city are mutarim. Now the third statement by Rav Chisda, which is about partnerships. An animal that's owned half by an individual who is in the ir hanidachat and half by an individual who is outside of the ir hanidachat, and obviously in the case where he's found guilty, but on the other hand, dough that half belongs to an individual that's in the ir hanidachat and the other half belongs to someone who's outside of the ir hanidachat, muteret, that is mutar. So Gemara's obvious question on Rav Chisda's statement is, what's the difference between an animal and a doe? If you're in partnership, either it should be mutar or it should be asur. Why do we have a different din by behemoth than we have by isa? So Gemara says, exactly that question. My taima, what's the reasoning for the differentiation here? Behema, kimant lo pigli dami. Damio. That an animal is considered as a whole entity and not as if it's split. Isa, kimant pligli damio. On the other hand, doe is considered to be split, which is that doe is easily divisible. Right, you can take dough by definition, or even the way it's made, can be divided. And even many times it is divided to bake it. So the division of dough is considered to be as if done already. Therefore, if someone in the Yeri Dachat, someone outside owns it, then the portion that belongs to the person in the Yeri Dachat will be burnt. The portion that doesn't belong to it, that will be mutar, will be given to the individual who it belongs to. On the other hand, an animal is a single entity. To split an animal is not really plausible. Mm-hmm. There are only two ways to split the animal. Right? One is to sell it, and the other one is to kill it. So in this instance over here, if you want, if shalak zayit basar below shchita, and since there's no possibility of shchita, so you can't split it. Since you can't split the animal itself in half, the only way to split it is to kill it. Because you only can get a basar of any meat from the animal, any flesh from this animal to eat, you'd have to kill the whole animal. You can't kill half the animal and get the food you want. To kill the entire animal, that shows you that's an indivisible object. So now, if that's the case, oh, so then why not shech the animal? So Tzvi has a great question. Just shech the animal, and then we'll split it in half. In Ochanami, right? So this actually really relates to a Gemara that's going to have a teiku later on, but Rashi already quotes the Gemara over here, which is, when you shech the animal, what is its status? Meaning that when you shech an animal that should be killed as part of Yerni Dachat, what are you doing to that animal? So Rashi over here claims like one side of the, or the conclusion, not like necessarily the conclusion of the Gemara, but one side of that. When you shech the animal, it's as if you killed the animal. There's a requirement in Yerni Dachat that everything goes to Cherev. Everything goes by the sword. Everything has to be destroyed or killed. So this behemah, or half of this behemah, is omed the mita, needs to be killed. When you shech the animal, you're not giving it a ritual shechita. You're doing the command of killing the animal that is required in a Yerni Dachat. And when you do that, the shechita is not matir, because it's not really being done, or it's not functioning as shechita, it's functioning as the destruction of the animal. And therefore, it's not a kosher shechita. You can see it in the Rashi, over here, come on to lo plige dami. So he says, even when you shecht it, it's not considered shechita. The Gemara is going to ask a query about that. The Gemara is not so sure that's the case. But Rashi brings that in order to, right here, to have Rav Chisda's statement make sense. You have to say that it's a case where shechita does not work. So now the Gemara says, by Rav Chisda, so here, this is Rav Chisda's question, which is the continuation. Can shechita move the status of nevela from the animal? So why? What's the story here? We have an animal that has to be put to death. So now you have two ways. You can put it to death, you can kill it, and then it'll be a nevela. Or you can shecht it. And a shechting an animal takes its tire, it doesn't make it into a nevela anymore. It's classified like a treifa, but here it's usher banua. And if he shechts it, it'll take away the shame nevela. The shechita work or not work? Why? One possibility is the fi cherev arar rachmano. The Torah says you have to destroy them by the sword. Loshna shchachta, right? Mishchat loshna ktala miktal. Doesn't matter whether you shecht it or you kill it. It says lefi cherev. However you kill the animal is considered to be dead afterwards. Not shechted, not hit by the sword. It's irrelevant how it's killed. We want the result, which is that it's killed. Or it's dead. And how you come to the result is irrelevant. The result is what's important. And when it's dead, it's dead. And that's what we want. That's not classified as a kosher animal, non-kosher animal, shkita, lo shkita, doesn't make a difference. Oh, the other side is, delma kevin de shachta, mahani le shkita. Right? Which is what you were thinking more along those lines, which is that if you do shkita, fine. You can't get an off from it. You can't use it. But you still did shkita, and it should be classified as a good shkita. And therefore, over here, even though it's usher by now, even though the animal has to remain there, it won't be classified as a nevela. In our case before, that Rav Chisda suggested we have partnership in the animal. That partnership, when you shech the animal, right, does the shkita work as a good shkita that it's classified as food over here? Or is it that the shkita is just trying to get to an end? It's a mean to an end. The means to the end of having the animal be dead. In that case, it won't classify as shechita. Gemara says, my teiku. The Gemara here leaves it as an unresolved issue. By Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef asks, Se'ar nashim tzidkaniot mahu. The hair of righteous women, right, women who are not going to be killed as part of the Yerni Dachat, what's the status of their hair? Your implication is that you're asking about tzidkaniot. That implies that rishayot are asur. You gather the possessions into the city and you burn them. The only possessions that require burning are possessions that only are missing being brought together into the center of the city. Over here, right, even for a shayot, right, you require cutting of their hair, and then the gathering of the possession and burning it. So therefore they're mufka from having their hair burnt because their hair is attached to them. So if it's true of rishayot, then what's even the question by tzidkaniyot? Alamarova, this should be the question. B'peyan achrit, they're talking about a wig. What's the status of a wig? Hechidami, what's the case here? Irdim mechubar begufa. If she's wearing it, kegufa damyo, then it's like on her body, meaning any clothing that she's wearing. Any clothing that an individual is wearing, if they are not chayav along with the rest of the city, they can walk out. The possessions that have to be burnt are the possessions that are not on their body. Possessions that are in their house, possessions that are in the city. But anything they're wearing is considered kigufam, and just like they're not killed as part of the Yerni Dachat, so too their clothing walks out with them. So a wig is considered to be a part of their clothing. If it's a part of their clothing, then they can walk out with it. Hello, ma? It must be a case. Lo, tzricha detali besifto. It's hanging on a hook in the house. So now, what's the story? Is it like possessions of tzaddikim that are found in the city that are destroyed? Or Dilma, came to Isle of Anafka, Klavusha Dami. Or maybe because anytime she leaves the house, or on a regular basis she would put it on, it's considered to be an article of clothing. She hangs it there temporarily on the hook. But normally it's worn. She goes out of the house. Anytime she goes out of the house, she puts it on. So when she goes out of the house, she puts it on. It's already considered an article of clothing that she normally wears. And therefore, it'll be saved. It will not be burnt along with the city. And that the Gemara again says, it's like her own, like her clothing. Teiku. The Gemara leaves that as also as a teiku. It's interesting to note that Rashi says, why do women wear wigs over here? Right, you would have thought he said, mitzad tzniyus, mitzad, the kisui arosh. Rashi says over here, gdil shel sarot. It's like a braid of hair. Da'almash osim lenoi, that they wear them for beauty. And it seems to be more of an issue of that it was something that made them look better. You know, where they have a fake ponytail or something that they put on that enhanced themselves, but not necessarily something that was related to their kisui asear. Necessarily, Rashi does not relate it to the religious imperative to cover their hair, but rather to a aesthetic side of that was used for beauty, like any other piece of jewelry. All right, to gather all the possessions to the city street and then burn it. Doesn't have a road through the city, doesn't come in here any dachat, according to Rabbi Shmuel. The Rabbi Shmuel says you take it literally. Either it has a road, or we don't make it in any dachat. Give Omer, in la rechov, what's in la rechov? No problem, we can solve this problem. You can just make a road. It doesn't have a road now, now we'll make a road, and then we'll have the problem solved. So, Maka Miflagay, what are they arguing about? Marzav rechovah mi kara mashma. Rabbi Shmuel believes when it says rechovah, rechovah means that was there already, that existed. Marzav rechovah hashtanami mashma. Rabbi Akiva believes that Rechovah means as long as there's a street. Doesn't matter when the street got there, as long as there is a street. So the word Rechovah, when the context of the pasuk, does it mean something that already was pre-existing, that it was there before they were tried as an Eri Dachat, or even once they're tried as an Eri Dachat, can you put the road in? And that's Machlokes between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva.
So Machlokes, what's the significance, what's the time frame of the Makkei?
I have to say that they're arguing about what the meaning of the Mapikei is over here, that it belongs to it. Rechov Shelah, what does it mean, Rechov Shelah? Does Rechov Shelah mean that it already was there beforehand and it was already existing for the city, or is Rechov Shelah meaning that it is a Rechov, it's there. It doesn't have to be there originally being part of it, but rather, as long as we have a road now, that's called Rechov Shelah. So, now, like they showed, Sheba Yifdu. So this next part of the Gemara is going to lead us through the entirety of the rest of the Amud here. And that is that when you have items in there that are Shlal Shamayim, they are not destroyed along with the city. The Gemara wants to know what is the case. Tarabanan, Hayu Ba Kodshim. If they were Kodshim in the city, then now, colon, Kodshim Mizbeach Yamutu. If they are Kodshim from the Mizbeach, that go on the Mizbeach, they die, not as part of the city, but they're konsinot to the kippah, right? They put it to death like they do with kochim are put to death. Kochim berek abayit, when we're talking about kochim that are donated to the mikdash for their monetary value, then ipadu, they should be redeemed. Utrumot, if we're talking about truma here, yirkavu, they should rot. Umaser sheni, v'kitvei hakodesh, v'nam maser sheni, and kitvei hakodesh, yiganzu, they should be put into geniza. Reb Shimon Omer, Behema velo Behemat Bechor, Umaser, Shalah, Prada Kesef Hekdesh. So he has learned some other words in the Pasuk that Behema means your Behema and not the Behema Bechor Maser. Shalah means excludes Kesef Hekdesh, Bekesef Maser. I'm not explaining it because the Gemara is going to have to explain it. Amamar, let's try to dissect this Brayta over here. Hayuba Kochim, if there were Kochim in it, Kochim is Beach Yamutu. The Gemara says very quickly, why should Kodshim Yizbeach die? Do they don't belong to the residents of the city? Kodshim belong to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Kodshim belong to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Why are we destroying these Kodshim as if they're the possessions of the people of the city? Yiru Achi Stavu. They should go out and graze until they get a mom, and then we'll sell them, use their money for Alot Nidava. Now clearly we don't want to bring the animal itself on the Yizbeach because it was in the Yerani Dachat, and the owners were Nidchu. But at least let us keep the kodshim, let it go out, get a mom, and then we'll redeem it, or we'll buy it out, and use that monies for korbanot in the mikdash. Why should it die? Rabbi Yochanan Amar, one answer is Rabbi Yochanan's answer, which is, zebach rishayim toiva. Right, that you can't bring a korban from a rasha. Right, the rasha, zebach rishayim toiva, Hashem is not interested in the korbanot of the rishayim, and over here they're clearly rishayim because they are in a Yarni Dachat, the owners worship the Avodah Zarah. Here Hashem's not interested in such a korban. We're talking about a case here where the kodshim are classified as belonging to the owners. Why? Because it's a case where he's responsible for replacing or for the anything that happens to the kodshim. So again, because he's responsible for it, it becomes as if it's his. Rabbi Shimon, he who says, in a case where you accept achrayut on kodshim, becomes mamon balim. So if that's the case, we according to Reish Lakish, the reason that they're yamut over here is because you own them. According to Rabbi Yochanan, it's a technical problem. It's not because you own them, you don't own them. But it's a problem of zevach rishayim toiva. We don't want these karbanot, so therefore you don't bring them. According to Reish Lakish, right, the problem is that you own it. How do you own it? Because you're responsible for it, therefore you own it. Where it says, v'ad v'seif Rabbi Shimon, Reish Lav Rabbi Shimon. Doesn't seem like a great answer, Reish, because you're explaining the Rabbanon as Rabbi Shimon. The second half of the Mishnah has Rabbi Shimon in it. So how could you be explaining the Reish as Rabbi Shimon if the Seifa is already Rabbi Shimon? Oh, so no, it's a case of Kodshim Kalim. It's a case here that we're talking about Kodshim Kalim. Valiba the Rabbi Yossi Aglili. According to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Damar Kodshim Kalim Mamon Balim. That's here. No, rather, we're not talking about Chayav Barachutan all Kodshim. We're limiting it to Kodshim Kalim. Kodshim Kalim are, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, classified as Mamon Balim. Since they're classified as Mamon Balim, they will be burnt along with the possessions of the city. So that's it. Reish Lakish's solution to the problem is that we're talking about Kodshim Kalim, and we're talking about that that's yours. It's your possessions because it's Mamon Balim. So what are you going to say? Kodshei Kodashim. What would be the din of Kodshei Kodashim? So what would you say? Mai, what would be the din? Ipadu. Of course, they'll be redeemed. Why? Because they are not classified as Mamon Balim. They're classified as Mamon Shemayim. So ain't no Hanami, you can't bring the animal itself on the Mizbeach, because that's already Zevach Rishim Toiva. But nevertheless, redeem the animal. You know, Yeruach Yistavu. You wait for a moment, you'll redeem it, then you use the monies for Alot Nitava. So Mar says, Adatani Seifa, instead of dividing up the Mishnah in this way, that you divide between Kodshei Mizbeach and Kodshei Beim Berach Abayit, you'd have a better differentiation, right? Say, Kodshei Beim Berach Abayit, Yipadu, Liflog Velitne Bedido, make the distinction internal to Kodshim. Bamed, Dvarim Mamorim Bekodshim Kalim. When do they die? When they're Kodshim Kalim, that David did a Mamon Balim. About Kodshei Kodashim, Yipadu. Why do you have to go all the way to Kodshei Berach Abayit? Even within Kodshei Mizbeach, there's a distinction. Kodshim Kalim get die, have to be killed, and Kodshei Kodashim are Yeruach Yistavu. They go out till they get a mom, and then they are redeemed and used for their monies for Korbanot. Mar says, no, Kevin de'ika dechata shemetu balea, lamita azal opsikale. Since it's not clear, it's not all Kodshei Kalim are Mamon Balim and die, and all Kodshei Kodashim are redeemed. That's not true. There's an exception to the rule in Kodshei Kodashim, which is the chatat. The chatat, even though it's a Kodshei Kodashim, nevertheless it's Yamutu. Why? Because we have a din, which is that there are chamesh chataot meitot. There are five types of chataot that are put to death. You know, these kochim are kontinatu ad bakipa. You put them into the special process where they die, kochim that are supposed to die. Why? One of those is chatat shemetu bala. Chatat that is missing its owners. Well, over here, the owners are going to be missing because they're all going to be dead. So because the owners are going to be killed as part of the ira nidachat, they're going to be killed as part of the nidachat, they are now chataot without balim. And therefore they're going to die. So you can't make a statement, kochim kalim, they are killed. Kochim kadoshim, redeemed. That's not true. Kochim kalim, yes, you're right, they are killed. Kodshei Kodashim depends what type of Kodshei Kodashim. If it's a Chatat, it dies. Other Kodshei Kodashim, like an Ola and a Asham, those will be redeemed. So since it's not clear, the Mishnah didn't use that as the distinguishing factor. So Bishlam Rabbi Yochanan Omer Kareish Lakish Diktiv Zevach Rishayim Toiva. We understand Rabbi Yochanan didn't hold like Reish Lakish because he said, Zevach Rishayim Toiva. Hashem's not interested in these types of Karbanot. Elo Reish Lakish, my time alone with Rabbi Yochanan. Why does Rabbi Reish Lakish search for a different answer? He doesn't like Rabbi Yochanan's answers. Because when do we say Zerach Hashim Toivah? That's when the object is still extant. The original object is still there. I mean that the animal that was Nikdash, that belonged to these individuals, is still here. But on the other hand, over here, once you let the animal graze, and it gets a mum in it, and then you take the monies and buy subsequent korbanot, those new korbanot are no longer zevach rishayim toiva. They're already changed. I mean, there's enough of a shinoi that they're not longer classified as zevach rishayim toiva. So it'll turn out here, the machlokes of Yochanan and Reish Lakish is, how far do we say zevach rishayim toiva? Yochanan says, it's not just about the animal itself, but any derivative of that animal is zevach rishayim toiva. Reish Lakish says, no, it's only when the animal itself, that which is kodesh, is zevach rishayim toiva. But once you've redeemed it, once you've exchanged it for a different item or a different animal, that's no longer classified as zevach rishayim toiva. All right, now Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara is now going to discuss Rabbi Shimon's opinion there. Behem techa v'lo behemat b'chor maser. B'may eskinen. What are we talking about here? Ilema b'tmimim. If we're talking about a b'chor and a maser that are tmimim, shlal shamayimu. That belongs to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. What do you do with a b'chor and maser that are tmimim? You bring them out to the Mizbeach and you put them in the Mizbeach in Yerushalayim. Ella b'balei mumim. We're talking about a case where they have a blemish already. Then it's shlalan inhu. What's the question? What do you do with a b'chor that has a mumin? It goes to the Kohen. Before a maser that has a mumin, you can eat it. You yourselves, the owner, can eat it. So that's considered, that's already either your possession or the possession of the Kohen. If that's the case, it should be burnt along with the possessions of the city. So Hamar Avina Lolam Bevali Munim. It's all Bevali Munim. Ooh. Mi Shinechal B'Torat Vem Techa. Yitzuelu Shinechalim B'Torat Vem Techa. B'Torat B'Chor U Maser. Shlala Shamayim Ninu. There are certain restrictions. The Gemara Dina Bechorota speaks about this. That when it comes to Bechor and Maser, they get a mum in them. They don't become complete chulin. It's not as if they, okay, now they're chulin the Gamra, you can do whatever you want with them. They are limited in their usage. Alright, their usage is you can only eat them. Right? That's all you can do with them, basically, is use them for food and to eat them. You're not allowed to, and you also have to shech them. You have to do it in a way that's not considered commercial. When you kill them, you can't weigh the meat in a commercial manner. You can't sell the meat in a commercial manner. You have to treat the animals with a certain residual amount of kedusha. In Ochanami, you can eat it, and it's permitted for you to eat it outside of Yerushalayim in your home. But there are restrictions on how you can eat it. What does that tell you when the restrictions on how you can eat it? That there's still residual kedusha in the Bechor and the Maser. If that's the case, this is what Ravina says, they are considered Kodshe Shamayim and not Kodshe Chol. Why? Or really not here. Behem Techa, v'lo behemet Bechor Maser. Why? Because your Behema would mean that you can do what you like with it. It's classified as your Behema when you do whatever you want with it. When already there are restrictions imposed by Kodesh on you, that's no longer Behem Techa. That's Behemet Bechor Maser. So again, Onan Ochanami is not going to end up on the Mizbeach. It's not called Shlal Shamayim, but it's still not classified as Behem Techa. It's still not your Behema. It's not your Behema. It's not burnt out with the rest of the city. That is Ravina's solution. Upliga de Shmuel. This argues on the position of Shmuel. Damar Shmuel. Shmuel makes a cryptic statement, which the Gemara is going to dissect in a second. Akol karev, akol nifteh. Everything is sacrificed and everything is redeemed. My kamai. What does he mean? So achi kamai. This is what he means. Kol shekarev shu tam. Anything that is put on the mizbeach when it's fine, v'nifteh kishabalmum, and is redeemed when it's balmul, mishmal imimat. That it's excluded from the word shlal. Because that's how we know. Shlal v'lo shlal shamayim. V'chol shekarev shu tam. Anything that is mukrav when it's tam. V'eino nifteh kishabalmum. But it's not redeemed when it's a balmum, kagon b'chor b'maser b'mehema nafka. That is excluded from the position or the word of behema. So the Shmuel suggests over here that the distinction between when you're excluded, when you're classified as shlal shamayim, and when you're classified as not being behem techa, well, that depends on your status. A korban, a regular korban, which is tam, if it was around normal, no blemishes in it, would be put on a mizbech. Whereas if it had a mum in it, right, then it would be redeemed. That type of animal is mishlalimait, is already excluded from shlal. If it's shlal shamayim, then it's excluded. If it's not shlal shamayim and it's yours, then you have to kill it. So here, what's the question? The question will revolve around whether you think that kodshim kalim are mamun balim or not. But the question really has nothing to do with our case over here of the bechor and the maser. There's a second category of animals who, when they are tmimim, they put on a mizbeach. When they have a mum in them, they're not redeemed. What happens to a bechor and a maser? They have a mum in them. They're eaten. You don't redeem them. You eat them. They're not allowed to be redeemed. The bechor and the maser have to be eaten, respectfully, by the kohen and by the owner. But they're not redeemed. In those cases, they're not classified.
The meaning was that they're exchanged for money, which they use for another animal.
Correct. That's in the first case. Those are the ones that are redeemed. Over here, there is no redemption whatsoever. You eat the animal itself. So in that case, they're excluded from the word behema, v'lo behemat b'chor u'maser. They're not, the problem here is not shlal shamayim. The problem over here is that it's not your behema. Right? So there's two different things. There's one which is shlal shamayim. Shlal shamayim relates to animals or categories of animals that are redeemed when they have a blemish in them. Whereas the animals over here, b'chor maser, which are not redeemed, right, they're in another category, totally different category. And that category is that they're excluded from the word behem techa or behema. So based on this, so that's the difference between them. That's the difference between Ravina and Shmuel. According to Ravina, it's only once they have a mum in them, right? Are they not classified anymore? Like they're classified, or they fall into this category of The only time that that pasuk is relevant is when you're dealing with an animal with a mum in it. Whereas if you have an animal that does not, that's a tam, according to Ravina, at least according to the Tanakhama, and maybe going to Rishonim, that's considered mamon balim. Since it's classified as mamon balim, then it would be put to death, because it's kochim kalim, and it's a tam, and therefore it'd be put to death. It's not excluded from the word bamtecha, it's not excluded from the word shlal, shamayim. It's shlalah, velo shlal shamayim, because it's in neither category. It's not shlal shamayim, because it's kochim kalim, which is mamon balim. It's not bamtecha, velo bamat bechor maser, because it's not in that category at all. That's only balim umim are in that category. Tmimim are not considered bamtecha, velo bam. So that would be Ravina's position. Shmuel, on the other hand, says the word behemtecha applies to mimim. They're excluded. They're entirely, that whole category of bechor maser, were excluded. So that means, what will Shmuel hold? Shmuel hold that a bechor maser is never killed in the city. Even when it's a tam. Even though it's kachim kalim. Nevertheless, it's not killed with the city because it's excluded from the word behemtecha, velo behemat, bechor maser. So according to them, the nafkamina between Shmuel and Ravina is about a tam, bechor maser. According to Ravina, a tam b'chor maser is kochim kalim and is belongs to the balim and they're mamon balim, therefore will be killed. According to Shmuel, that's excluded from the pasuk of behem techa v'lo behemet b'chor maser and therefore it would not be killed. And that's enough gemina between them. All right, trumot yirkavu. Trumot will be laid to rot. Am Rav Chista lo shnai lo truma biyad Yisrael. We're talking about the truma that belongs in the hand of Yisrael. Well, trumat biyad kohen kevin demonehu tisareif. Because it belongs to the Kohen, then it is burnt. Because it goes to part of the city, it's a possession of the city, it's burnt with the rest of the city. If it belongs to the, if it's a Yisrael that has it, and it's yet to be given to the Kohen who's in the Yarni Tachat, therefore it's your Kavu. Out of Kavu, we don't burn it, but it's also not Mutar Ba'anol. So Mark said, Meiti Rav Yosef, Meister Sheni, V'kitvei HaKodesh, Yiganzu. Talking about Meister Sheni and Kitvei HaKodesh, they are put into Geniza. Ba'am Meister Sheni biyad Yisrael, Ketruma biyad Kohen. Meister Sheni in the hand of a regular Yisrael is the same thing as Truma biyad Kohen. And yet we say, even though it's Meister Sheni in the hand of Yisrael, you do not burn it with the possessions of the city. You put it into Geniza. But we don't burn it with the possessions of the city. So over here, that should be the same din by a Truma. Truma biyad Kohen should not be burnt along with the possessions of the city, but it rather should be your Kavu. This is what Rav Chista meant to say. The truma is in the hand of the Kohen, then it has to yir kavu. It has to let to be rot at a kavod. It's burnt. It's not burnt as part of the city, but it has to be destroyed. It's not burnt as part of the city because that's yir kavod for the truma. On the other hand, it is has to be destroyed, so yir kavu. We let it rot, and therefore it'll be destroyed by itself. Me'aleha, it becomes destroyed. About truma biyad Yisrael, tinatein the Kohen shebir acheret. Truma in the hands of Yisrael can be given to a Kohen in another city. Who says Truma in the hand of Yisrael can be given to anyone he wants? He doesn't have to give it to the Kohen in this city. He can give it to a Kohen in another city. So in our Havamino, we thought that it was when it was the hand of Yisrael, well, he could give it to a Kohen in the Yerni Dachat, and he could give it to a Kohen that's not in the Yer Dachat. One of them would be fine, one of them would get burnt. So in that case, we say, all right, let it be your kav. Let it rot, because we don't know who he would give it to. We don't know if he would give it to the Kohen in the city or anything. I would give it to the other Kohen. According to this second statement of Rav Chista, it doesn't matter. The possibility of being able to give it, since the Yisrael can give it to whoever he wants, that makes it not part of the shlal of the city. It's not part of the shlal of the city. Therefore, it's not burnt along with the city, and it's good truma still. It's not hot though. We have a Mishnah that deals with Isa with Chala.
Even though the Yisrael himself was part of the city.
Right.
He could theoretically give it to someone else.
Right. Since he is part of in the city, he could theoretically give it to a Kohen outside of the city. Therefore, it's saved. Or someone who's outside the city, who has their truma that is kept in the city, for some reason, he can take it out of the city and give it to whichever Kohen he wants. It's not our time. We have a Mishnah that speaks about Chala. Isa shel Meiser Sheni p'tura min Chala. And Isa that is made from Meiser Sheni is p'tur min Chala. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Chamimim mechayavim. No, you're chayav in Chala. Am Rav Chista. Again, Rav Chista, we have a lot of statements throughout this stuff. This whole section is all about Rav Chista's statement, or his qualifications of Mishnayot, the Tanaic statements. Rav Chista, machloket v'Meiser Sheni b'Yerushalayim. Once the Meiser Sheni has been brought up to Yerushalayim, where there it can be eaten by the Balim. It becomes basically food in Yerushalayim. So there the Chachamim say, it's Chayav and Chala, it's yours now to eat. Since you can eat in Yerushalayim, it's yours to eat. It's Chayav and Chala. Yes, says no. Rabbi Meir says no. It's Meiser Sheni. Meiser Sheni is Mufka from the Parsha of Chala. But The Rabbi Meir Saver, Maaser Sheni Mamon Gavoa, that it still belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's still considered Maaser Sheni. Rabbanan Savi, Mamon Ejel Tu, once you bring it to Yerushalayim, it's yours to eat, that becomes like your possessions. Aval Bigvulim Divrei Akol Patur. When it's outside of Yerushalayim, everybody agrees that it still has, that has a classification of Maaser Sheni. Why? Because you can't eat it. Outside of Yerushalayim, you can't eat Maaser Sheni. So everybody agrees outside of Yerushalayim, it's not Mamon Balim, it's Mamon Gavoa. Till it reaches Yerushalayim, it's for sure Mamon Gavoa. Once it reaches Mamon Yerushalayim, then there's a machlokas. Since you can eat it, is it considered Mamon Balim? Or since it's still Maaser Sheni, it has rules about Maaser Sheni, it's Mamon Gavoa. That's machlokas between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. What's the question? So you have Rav Yosef, who's asking a lot of questions of Rav Chisda, asked another question over here. Meitiv Rav Yosef. Our brayta that we brought before. Maaser Sheni, v'kitvei kodesh, yivganzu. Comes to Maaser Sheni, you put it into Geniza. So let's think about the case here. You're inside of a Ira Nidachat. Someone's inside of Ira Nidachat, and he has Maaser Sheni that needs to be taken up to Yerushalayim. What does Rabbi Meir say about Maaser Sheni in a city outside of Yerushalayim? Mamon Gavoa. What do the Chachamim say about Maaser Sheni outside of Yerushalayim? According to Rav Chisda, Mamon Gavoa. So now, if I have Mamon Gavoa, what's the din of Shlal Shemayim? Shlal Shemayim doesn't get destroyed with the city, so why are you putting them into Geniza? Why are you destroying the Maaser Sheni in the city? They're all Mamon Shemayim, they all belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why are you doing anything? The Maaser Sheni should be just fine. So it says, Mayaskinan. Oh, but I'll tell you the case here. If you say that it's a case in Yerushalayim, you have here any dachat, what are you going to suggest? The case in the Brisa, then a case where the Maaser Sheni is already in Yerushalayim. And that's why it's considered Mamon Balim. And that's why, according to the Chachamim, at least, you would destroy it as part of this city. He goes, well, let me tell you a little secret. 10 things you said about Yerushalayim, and this is one of them. Yerushalayim can never be Yerushalayim Dachat. So it's not even a relevant case. You can't make that the case. Elo, so what are you going to say? Be'ir Acheret. We're talking about a city that's outside of Yerushalayim. V'askuol Gava, and they brought the Maaser Sheni into Yerushalayim. So I'm at a city outside of Yerushalayim that is now been determined to be Yerushalayim Dachat. But the area was brought, the Maaser Sheni for that city was already brought up to Yerushalayim and was inside the walls of Yerushalayim. Mar says, what's the question over there? Hakaltua mechitzot. The mechitzot of Yerushalayim already captured it, and you're not allowed to take the Maaser Sheni back out. Maaser Sheni's in Yerushalayim, it can't leave there. If it can't leave there, why would you destroy it along with the possessions of the city? It's outside of the city, it's no longer part of the city. You need, according to Rav Chisda, niktavatzim betocha. In order to burn it with the possession of the city, you have to be able to bring it back to the city. This Maaser Sheni can't be brought back to the city. It's locked in Yerushalayim now. Must be a case that you're out in the Gvulim. So it's a problem for you, Rav Chisda. It's outside in the Gvulim. You have here any dachat Maaser Sheni, and somebody has an opinion that it's destroyed. Well, that can't be, according to Rav Chisda, that can't be the Chachamim, and it can't be Rabbi Meir. So who is it? So Rav Chisda's explanation of the Braita must be wrong. His qualification of the Braita must be wrong. Because we need an opinion to say that outside of Yerushalayim it's considered Mamon Balim. And we don't have that according to Rav Chisda. So Mar says, no. Elolo, the Olam Dir Acheret, we're talking about a case where it was another city outside of Yerushalayim. Baskula Gavan, they brought it up to Yerushalayim. Ah, you said before you can't leave Yerushalayim. The food, Maaser Sheni can't leave Yerushalayim. Bachu Maisvina, Shinitma, that it became Tamei. Well, if it becomes Tamei, then you're allowed to take the Maaser Sheni back out of Yerushalayim. Mar says, what do you mean? Why? If it becomes Tamei, why does that help? Valifrake, redeem it. You're allowed to redeem Maaser Sheni that's in Yerushalayim that became Tamei. Even though normal Maaser Sheni that's in Yerushalayim, you're not allowed to redeem it. You have to eat it there in Yerushalayim, you're not allowed to redeem it anymore. So over here, it became Tamei. So you said, it became Tamei, so therefore it could leave Yerushalayim. Well, there are two things. Even if it can leave Yerushalayim and become Tamei, it also can be redeemed. So why not redeem it and keep the Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim? How do you know the Maaser Sheni that became Tamei? You can redeem it even inside of Yerushalayim. Why? If you are unable to carry it up to Yerushalayim, you're allowed to redeem it. So here, Seito means it's too heavy, it's a load. But he says, Ve'ein Seit el achila. But the word Seit is also used as to eat. Why? Shenemar by Yisam Asat Meit Panav. It's talking about Yosef and the brothers. Ve'isam Asat Meit Panav. They took a portion from in front of him, a portion, here's a portion of food. So they said, lo tochal seito, if you cannot eat it, why can't you eat Maaser Sheni? Because it's tameh. Then that's what Rabbi Elazar says, that's the drasha, then redeem it. So you should be able to redeem it. So Mar says, hachem ha'iskinan belakuach, right? There was a case here where it was purchased. He took money from outside of Yerushalayim, he redeemed it, and then he purchased food inside of Yerushalayim. Once you purchase food in Yerushalayim, you can no longer redeem it again. You're allowed to redeem it again. Gemara says, well, let him redeem it. It's none. Alakuach b'kesem meiser sheni b'meiser sheni shenitma yipadeh. So the Braisa says that even if it's been purchased, monies that were already redeemed the original meiser sheni, brought to Yerushalayim, they were expended on foods in Yerushalayim, those foods become tamei. You're allowed to redeem it. So that's not a good solution. So Mar says, no, Rabbi Yehuda damar yikaver. According to Rabbi Yehuda, says that you bury such meiser sheni. Meiser sheni that became tamei after it was already redeemed once, then purchased items inside Yerushalayim and became tamei, yikaver. It's buried, it's no longer ra'oi. So the Gemara says that's the case here. The case here is that they had irani dachat, food from irani dachat, meiser sheni irani dachat, they took it up to Yerushalayim. It's in Yerushalayim now, so it's mutar to eat over there. Why does it have to be ignazu? Because it's tamei. If it's tamei, we said let's redeem it. No, this is like it was already purchased. Meiser sheni was already purchased with the monies, so you're allowed to redeem it. We said you're allowed to redeem it. It's like Rabbi Yehuda says you have to bury it. So now what can you do with it? Is it allowed to leave Yerushalayim? The answer is yes. What do you have to do with this meiser sheni? It has to be kaver anyway. So what do? You bring it back to the city or any dachat, the iganzu, you put it into Geniza. And it is destroyed along with the possessions of the city. So it's this unusual case where meiser sheni would be freed. Now Gemara asks the basic question here. Yochi, my area in any dachat. I feel downly no. This is not a din in Irani Dachat. It's a din in anybody. Anybody's Meiser Sheni, which they redeemed it, brought it to Yerushalayim, bought food with it, and then it became Tamei. What's Rabbi Yehuda going to tell you to do? Bury it. It has nothing to do with Irani Dachat. You'd have to bury it whether you're in Irani Dachat or not. The whole din is irrelevant to Irani Dachat. Elolam b'tahor. Now we're talking about here Meiser Sheni that's Tahor. What did we say before? Meiser Sheni Tahor, you're not allowed to take it out of the Mechitzot. We're going to Nafu Mechitzot, a case where the Mechitzot fell down. This is a case in the end of Makot, we'll get to it. But a case where the Mechitzot of Yerushalayim fell down. After they brought it into the city of Yerushalayim, the walls were destroyed or the walls fell, and therefore there are no longer walls. So now there's a requirement to eat Meiser Sheni, you need Mechitzot. You need Mechitzot around Yerushalayim. So that's where it says, Amar Rabba, Mechitzot Lechol Deoraita. The fact that you need Mechitzot to eat Meiser Sheni Yerushalayim, that's a Din Min Ha Torah. That's Doraita. The fact that once you bring it into Yerushalayim, you're not allowed to take it back out of Yerushalayim, that the walls capture it, that's a Din Darabonon. Vechigoz Rabbonon, ki itnehu l'mechitza. The Rabbanon only goes there when the walls are still there. Ki letnehu mechitza, when the walls are not there, they were not goes there. I mean that the fact that you're not allowed to take Meiser Sheni out of Yerushalayim, once you brought it into Yerushalayim, is not a din d'oraisa. That's a din d'rabbonon. But it's still a restriction against you removing it from Yerushalayim. You can't move it from Yerushalayim, you can't bring it to Nikvatzim B'tochai, you can't bring it and pile it up in the city to burn it. So therefore it'll be exempt from Irani Dachat. But this is an unusual case. The walls fell down when the Meiser Sheni was in Yerushalayim. Once the wall fell down, the d'oraisa din will stand, that you need mechitzot in order to eat it. But the d'rabbonon din of that you're not allowed to take Meiser Sheni out of Yerushalayim, that's only applicable, the chamun where goes there. There goes there only in a normal case. What's a normal case? Where there are mechitzot there. Then you can't take it out. But if the mechitzot fell, the gezer of the chamun does not apply to that, because that was a case outside of the what they thought would happen, outside of something that they would have considered. Since outside of their consideration, the gezerah doesn't apply, and therefore you could take it out of Yerushalayim. So here the mechitzot fell down, you have an irani dachat outside of Yerushalayim, and you can take the meiser sheni back, or you can basically have to eat ganzu, you have to put it into geniza, because you should have to bring it back to the city to burn it, but because of the kavod of the meiser sheni, we tell you eat ganzu. Okay, we'll stop over here.